Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. How far have we come as a society when we encounter someone with a disability in our everyday lives? Do some of us still flinch at the sight of someone who has been disfigured by war or crime or fire? People who are visually impaired or hearing impaired? And how does that spill over into the way mass media depict the disabled? Dr. Katie Foss, Assistant Professor of Journalism, is teaching a seminar course this semester titled Media and Disability, and it takes in aspects ranging from news coverage to reality programs to fictional depictions. We'll turn the camera on the media and take a closer look at how they show or don't show the disabled to the world after this from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. MTSU's Todd Art Gallery is showcasing Nashville's lengthy art influence on the region, as well as the work of upcoming student artists with two new exhibits, the Second Nashville Art Gallery Expo and the Department of Art's Spring Juried Student Exhibit will continue through March 13th. MTSU's Wind Ensemble continues to stand alone among Tennessee University bands with the release of its second CD, Earthrise, a collaboration with three international composers. The 12-song collection is part of the Naxos Classical Wind Band Classics series. And the top two commanders of the Civil Air Patrol's Tennessee Wing toured MTSU's flight and air traffic control simulators February 21st as part of a fact-finding mission that could result in an aerospace education partnership to benefit area youth. For MTSU News at any time, go to MTSUnews.com.
Katie, welcome back.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
How did you get the idea for this course?
Actually, this came out of a project that I've been working on for the last 3 years with Dr. Jason Reinecke. We surveyed students and faculty in the College of Mass Communication. And what we found is that while students and faculty are generally positive about students with disabilities, was the focus of this survey, they don't know a lot about students with disabilities and really aren't talking a lot about people with disabilities in media in the mass communication courses. And so I really wanted to address that with this seminar, Media and Disability, to have a whole semester to just focus on different issues with media and disability.
The first thing that I thought of when I found out about this course was the Franklin D. Roosevelt Memorial in Washington, D.C., and the flack during the planning stages about whether FDR should be depicted in a wheelchair or not. And there is a statue of him in a wheelchair, and there is a statue of him seated with a cape draped over him, so you can't really tell, and his little dog, Fala, is right by his side. Talk to us about the difference in the sensibility at play in the 1930s and 40s when FDR's handlers did not want photos of him in a wheelchair or in his steel leg braces to get out before the public, and today's sensibilities.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting debate, because if we're thinking about famous people with disabilities throughout history, I think most of us think of FDR. But yet, if we put ourselves at that moment, as you said, they really tried to downplay FDR's disability, that he used a wheelchair or that he needed a lot of assistance to get around. So it's interesting that I think our collective memory paints him as someone with a disability, someone who was a very strong character in history, who accomplished so many things and had a disability. So kind of a model for other people and certainly helping to change public perception of disability. But at the same time, again, if we think about the context of the 1930s and 1940s, in which disability was really frowned upon, it wasn't understood, we didn't have a lot of support for people with disabilities, it's a completely different issue.
Did it surprise you that there were some people who didn't want the permanent memorial to him to depict him as being in a wheelchair?
It surprised me and it saddened me, especially with contemporary perspectives on disability. I like to think that we've come past that point, that we don't try to mask disability anymore.
It would also be a masking of history. It would be
of who he was, of his identity,
right,
and what he looked like.
It would be a an atrocity from the standpoint of a professional historian. That would be antithetical to everything that they're supposed to be about, which is, you know, about the truth. With regard to reality TV, making a quantum leap into the 21st century, those of us, including me, who don't like the whole concept of reality TV, feel that it reduces all of human entertainment to the old carnival freak show, which included the bearded lady and the conjoined twins, and it, you know, it gave them an opportunity to make money, but at the same time exploited them. Is that the way reality shows treat the disabled?
I think it depends on what type of reality show we're talking about. If you look at a show like Survivor, which the whole show is based off tokenism, and you get a type of archetype for every group, and they've occasionally had characters with disabilities. I think they've had a few deaf or hard of hearing characters. I think that it, while, again, it plays off of tokenism, it can be an opportunity to showcase what people of different abilities can do. Yeah, a lot of times we don't see that. Now, if we want to talk about kind of the specialty programs like on the Learning Channel or Discovery Health, they do a lot of the contemporary freak show or sideshow kind of things. If you look at the titles of those shows, you know, yes. Man with Half a Body.
The 600-pound woman.
Yes. Mermaid Girl.
Uh-huh.
Tree Trunk Guy.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of shows, I think they really do kind of capitalize off of the spectacle. But again, even within those shows, it can be an opportunity to just say, hey, wait a minute, they're just like everybody else, depending on how they tell the story. Unfortunately, most of the time, it's going to be an able-bodied person doing the narrative, the voiceover for the whole thing, as we watch how this person is different, which again is unfortunate.
I mean, it would be different if they looked at it from a strictly clinical medical perspective of how this happens, what sort of genetic factors are involved, and you know, and took a serious approach to it, and the psychological factors of dealing with the stigma in society and that kind of thing, as opposed to trying to turn it into an entertainment feature of some kind.
Absolutely. Well, and I would say that we have shows like Little People, Big World, which I think is much more positive in that even though the show is about this family, because they have several people who are little people, and that's why it's a show. I mean, that's the downside. But yet, at the same time, it's usually their voices. It's the Roloff family's voices that are coming through, and they're driving the narrative.
Right.
And I really do think they've helped adjust society to what different people look like and what different people can do and that kind of thing. So it can be very positive in that way, too.
It was interesting that late in 2013, NBC tried to revive Ironside, which was a program from the 1970s. It was popular. It was on for several seasons. Raymond Burr played a chief of detectives who was paralyzed by a would-be assassin's bullet, and but he continued his job of chief of detectives from a wheelchair with you know, assistance from his able-bodied crew. And the remake with Blair Underwood was canceled almost immediately for lack of ratings. So I don't know if the show was canceled because it had bad writing or it was just bad all over, or if people were, you know, just not ready to look at a young, hip person in a wheelchair, you know, thrive and survive and not be apologetic for it. What do you think?
I watched the show, and it was a terrible show. I think that all of the above, when you proposed different reasons why it was canceled. But that show got a lot of criticism from disability advocates who said, why didn't you cast a person who uses a wheelchair for the main role instead of using Blair Underwood? So I think there were already problems just in the casting itself, especially because the contemporary trend and where we're moving towards is always use a person with a disability to play a person with a disability. That's not always the case, but that's where we're going. And so people get understandably upset when they choose to cast an able-bodied actor for a role that could have been given to a wheelchair user.
But is that necessary? I mean, we have straight actors playing gay people, and we have always had white actors playing Othello with very lousy makeup,
and not
very convincingly.
Yeah.
But it a straight actor can play a gay person convincingly, and a gay actor can play a straight person convincingly.
That is completely true. But it's part of it's about opportunity to cast a person with a disability in that role. But I think then there's a lot of other reasons why that show got canceled. And again, poor writing, I think, was part of it, too. Actually, going back to reality TV, there's a reality series called Push Girls, which features four women, four very successful, beautiful women who use wheelchairs. That's just their way of life, which is interesting that that show, even though, I mean, a small cable audience, but it's had several seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So that, again, showcasing, hey, they can, you know, people who use wheelchairs can be sexual, can be beautiful, can work, can live independently, all of these things that we don't see a lot of those messages in fictional television or in fictional film.
We'll be right back. We'll take a break. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Army ROTC College Program at MTSU prepares students mentally, physically, and emotionally to become leaders and promotes virtues of duty, honor, country. ROTC cadets are involved in all academic disciplines, athletics, and student organizations at MTSU. Full scholarships and tuition assistance are awarded based on merit. All cadets upon graduation will serve their country as second lieutenants either in the Army, Army Reserve, or Army National Guard. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about Dr. Katie Foss's Media and Disability class. She's an assistant professor of journalism here at MTSU, and we're examining how the mass media depict disability. Another reality TV show, Dancing with the Stars, had a veteran named J.R. Martinez participating as a contestant, and he was an actor on All My Children, the soap opera. His face was damaged in a fire, and it's quite obvious when you look at him. He doesn't try to hide anything with makeup or whatever, and he got a great many votes. He was a fairly good dancer, but I'm wondering if this is part of our attitude toward disability as a society, if we are more willing, more sympathetic, more empathetic if the person was a military veteran who suffered the injuries in conflict.
Depends on the type of disability, but I would say that we've always had society as a whole, at least since the Civil War, we've had more sympathy towards and provided more help and rehabilitation services, more restitution for people who became disabled due to conflict or as war veterans. But in fact, that's helped overall change societal attitudes and create programs for people with disabilities as a whole. For example, after World War II, many veterans came back with hearing loss, and that actually helped some of the first programs towards speech reading courses and the field of speech pathology and audiology came about because of, again, the veterans.
So it actually advanced the science.
Mm-hmm. And there was a big push to employ veterans with disabilities. And this big push to employ veterans with disabilities led to people getting used to, hey, people who have disabilities can work. Let's hire other people with disabilities. So in turn, it benefited everybody, but there's definitely been more of a soft spot for people with disabilities who are wounded during combat. But in terms of responsibility, we love to blame people in America. That's just part of our individualism, part of our discourse, that we love to take responsibility for our own actions, and when something bad happens, we look to, well, why did that happen? And unfortunately, we probably can tie some of that in with certain types of disabilities, just like we see it with different disease, for example, like skin cancer for a heavy tanner.
Yeah, it's curious to me that some people who become disabled because they played football and it happened while they were in the game and they got tackled in such a certain way, or they, like I said, had a diving accident. They dove into shallow water, or they had a skiing accident. They ran into a tree. There seems to be a tendency on the part of some people to say, well, it's their own damn fault, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So why should I feel sorry for them? But the disabled don't want your pity anyway. In effect, in a sense, some of the able-bodied people are the ones who are more disabled because of the perspective that they have. They're torn between feeling pity for the disabled and their own uncomfortability at being around the disabled as an able-bodied person.
Mm-hmm. And those perspectives are shifting. So we've moved, starting to move from more of a medical perspective or a pathological view of disability, in which having a disability means that in some ways you're, and for lack of a better word, this is horrible, but defective or different in a negative way, towards more of a cultural model of disability, in which we think about, well, what are the cultural constructs that create the disability? is someone truly disabled if we can do a bunch of things that make life so much easier? For example, is a person with low vision or a person who is blind really disabled in his or her home when everything is set up to make a life a little bit easier?
And will the computer generation take a totally different approach mm-hmm. to disability when they see that Stephen Hawking mm-hmm. is made more viable as a member of society and in the world by the fact that he has the electronic equipment that mm-hmm. enables him to speak and to express himself?
Yeah, absolutely. Technology has made a huge difference. But I think Stephen Hawking's an interesting case in that it's amazing what he has done. Disability or no disability, it's absolutely amazing. But if you look at the news coverage of Stephen Hawking, it often leads, especially in the 1980s, a lot of the leads would focus on his disability first, even though his great accomplishments to physics are so much more important.
And that leads us to journalism, which we'll jump to after this break. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Middle Tennessee State University Women's Studies Research Series features compelling monthly talks on gender-related topics by faculty and graduate students. The series offers a chance to learn about research in progress and to chat with faculty in an informal setting. All lectures are free and open to the public and are held on the MTSU campus. This is Associate Professor of Journalism, Dr. Jane Marcellus.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about the media and disability course being taught by Dr. Katie Foss from the Department of Journalism here at MTSU. It's a journalist's responsibility to seek the truth. Mm-hmm. But are journalists' stories about people who are disabled or stories about anything at all in which a disabled person just happens to be one source or mm-hmm. one aspect of the story colored by these societal stigmas that we've all grown up with?
Definitely. Well, what we want is the latter. We want to have stories in which a person just happens to have a disability and is a source for a different story. Is the disability even worth mentioning most of the time? Or a lot of times do reporters put it in there to try to get more readers because, again, trying to get reader sympathy so they want to read it. I think it depends on what kind of story we're talking about, too. We still see those human interest spectacle-type stories in which it's, wow, look at this person with a disability. I can't believe this person can play basketball. It's like, well, if you take away the disability, would you have a story? No, then is it worth reporting?
So there's always this kind of wow factor that mm-hmm. they're looking for. Is this consultant-driven, or is it market-driven, or is it just human failing?
All of the above, and our shift towards more human interest stories, too. Mm-hmm. Our need to fill up hours and hours and hours of news compared to when we used to just have a couple hours a night for news. But again, I think that's getting a little bit better. If you look at how language has shifted, that you use person with disabilities, not the disabled, that you use, again, you focus on, well, okay, person who is blind, not blind person, person who uses a wheelchair, right? We're not going to use words like crippled anymore, although you do still see those kinds of words to refer to inanimate objects. So, like, the economy is crippled. It's like, don't use those words. I think where we see the worst types of stigma would be attached to people with mental illness, though. That's an area in which we just haven't made the same strides as we have with physical disabilities.
Because it's a disability you can't see.
Mm-hmm. And hard to understand.
Yeah, and you don't even know that a person does suffer from that until mm-hmm. some sort of stressful circumstances affect the individual mm-hmm. and their illness comes to the fore. Mm-hmm. Have we come any further in depictions of that vis-a-vis the movies? Because when Olivia de Havilland made The Snake Pit in the 40s, it was declared a tour de force performance, an expose of how awful insane asylums, as they were called back then, really are. And yet here in the 21st century, we have A Beautiful Mind depicting what John Nash really went through in mm-hmm. his head and looking at it from his perspective mm-hmm. instead of society's perspective of the mentally ill.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's a give and take. I would say that the popularity of crime dramas has done the most damage to how we portray people with mental illness. Those shows that, like Criminal Minds, for example, usually they'll have a statement or two in there like, most people with schizophrenia don't wind up being serial killers. But yet, again and again and again, we see the serial killer has mental illness and, again, reinforcing that mental illness equals dangerous. And I think we see the same thing in news stories as well. Well, why did this person commit this crime? And then they mention the person's mental illness. And then, again, we attach mental illness to the person, meaning this person's dangerous, or we should fear this type of person.
We'll pause again briefly. We'll be right back. This is MTSU on the Record.
Women in Science and Engineering, or WISE, helps college women prepare for and become involved in science-related careers. WISE nurtures women's interest in these fascinating and critical fields and provides mentoring and networking opportunities. The group's main goal is to assure women of their importance in all scientific and technical fields and to promote equal opportunity and treatment of women in science. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, WISE Advisor.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about Media and Disability, a seminar course. It's being taught this spring by Dr. Katie Foss from the Department of Journalism. There are TV ads for items that would help the disabled, such as walk-in tubs or medical alarm buttons or adult diapers that you can have discreetly shipped to your door instead of you having to go to the grocery store and people see you buy them. But in those advertisements, I hardly ever see any young people. They're all old, you know, as if we expect infirmity to come only with age, not by accident or through war or crime to someone in their teens, 20s, 30s.
Or born that way.
Yeah. Are the marketers of these items just playing the odds, or are they prejudiced?
Both. And actually, I would say that we really see it with hearing aid ads that you only see. You only see senior citizens using hearing aids and all these, and they repeatedly convey that it should be invisible, when in truth, especially if you look at hearing loss rates, it's getting younger and younger and younger because of all the noise exposure. So absolutely, they're perpetuating a stigma that any kind of disability is going to be associated either with birth, you're born with it, or with age, and ignoring everybody in between.
And if you are born with a certain disability, say you're born without a hand, for example, I'm wondering if the media depicts genetic issues differently than issues that have occurred to an able-bodied person who then became disabled as a result of some consequence.
I think it depends on what era we're looking at, first of all, and it depends on the story. But I would say that sometimes you even see stories go back to the mother. What did she take while pregnant? Which is really sad that
we've got to blame somebody again.
We like to blame people. Yep. But I think actually one area we haven't talked about is social media. And I think that has helped a lot. For example, videos on Facebook about just different types of people that you would never see covered in mainstream media, that you wouldn't see on TV. But yet, I know there's a YouTube video that was circulating for a while about a woman who lost part of her leg as an auto mechanic, and then she built a leg out of Legos. It's just funny. I mean, it's creative. It's funny. It's not super serious in any way. But those kinds of things.
Was it just artistic, or did it actually work?
It actually worked. But
it
was just for fun. She did it for fun. Uh-huh. But what I'm saying is that those kind of counter messages, I think, are helping the stigmas perpetuated in mainstream media.
So social media could actually become a way to more enlightened, more progressive thought, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, because the disabled can set up a camera on their own right in front of them and do everything themselves or almost everything themselves, edit themselves on their own computer and post it and say, you know, this is who I am. This is that my disability is not the defining totality of my life.
And it provides a voice for everybody. And for especially those who would not normally get a voice in mainstream media because they wouldn't make it through all the gatekeepers who would think, oh, our audience doesn't want to see that or wouldn't understand that. But instead, having these alternative media formats gives anyone who has a computer can have a voice. And there's actually a lot of really interesting advocacy blogs, just like what you described, of people who said, hey, this is me, or this is what I think about this, or, hey, I really like fashion. Check out my designs, regardless if a person has a disability or not.
Is there any credence, do you think, to the point of view that to show someone who has been terribly, terribly burned, for example, mm-hmm. in war or in as a result of some kind of domestic violence dispute or something like that, mm-hmm. that you are actually doing them a disservice and robbing them of their dignity by showing them in that state? Is that too condescending?
Not if the person wants to. I think it's all about the individual person and, again, giving the person agency and saying, I want to do this. Okay, well, that's fine, instead of putting them on display. There's a big difference, again, between a person speaking out and having somebody else speak about them.
If they are empowered to make the decision, mm-hmm. then that speaks volumes about not treating the disabled as someone who is lesser than.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. We'll take one more break. We'll be right back. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Middle East Center at MTSU seeks to promote greater understanding of the politics, history, and culture of this vitally important region of the world. Its mission includes the promotion of outreach programs and faculty research. The center sponsors lectures by Middle East experts and scholarly exchanges. We're especially pleased to offer a new interdisciplinary minor in Middle East Studies with courses in Arabic and Hebrew. This is Dr. Alan Hibbard, Center Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Now, in the flyer for this class, mm-hmm. one of your bullet points is disability versus cultural trait, who decides? Mm-hmm. What did you mean by that, and how can a cultural trait be mistaken for a disability?
Ah, interesting. One of my last weeks in class. Uh-huh. Well, we especially see the term cultural trait described with deafness. So the notion of deaf culture, which is very real. From a deaf culture, people are unified by not only most people who are deaf or hard of hearing are going to be part of the deaf community, but also shared language. So through American Sign Language, a shared history, a history of oppression, shared education, in that a lot of people who are members of the deaf community went to deaf residential schools or graduated from Gallaudet University. So a lot of people who are participants or who identify with the deaf community don't consider themselves disabled. So it's a reframing of what disability is. Is it truly a disability, or can be thought of more like skin color? Mm-hmm. If the person does not feel disabled, should we consider that person disabled?
What do you want your students to get out of this class most of all?
I would say one thing that I always want students to get is I want students to think about the things we've talked about in class beyond our class. So as they're reading news online or as they're watching a movie two semesters from now, to think about, oh, well, that's an interesting portrayal of disability, or, oh, that's really negative. Well, what were they thinking? How could they make it better? Especially for students who either want to work in television or film production, or for students who want to be reporters or work in PR, all the different media areas, because when they become media creators, I want them to remember, well, let's think about how we talk about people with disabilities. Because we're talking about future media creators when we talk about students in mass communication.
Media and disability. Dr. Katie Foss, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.